Hi there, and welcome to the Growing Opportunities podcast series. I am Michelle Roberge.
And I am Megan Darcy.
We are the agriculture coordinators for the regional district of Bulkley Chaco.
We are small-scale farmers with a keen interest in agriculture, and we're excited to be using this format to communicate information about regional agriculture to the broader community. This podcast series will touch on different agriculture topics important to new farmers and producers wanting to diversify their farm operations.
If you have questions about these podcasts or anything agriculture in the regional district, please go to rdbn.bc.ca, click on the agriculture link, and you'll find our contact information there.
We hope that you enjoy this podcast series on growing opportunities in the RDBN.
The RDBN is providing this podcast as a public service. It is neither a legal interpretation nor a statement of government policies. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by the RDBN. The views expressed by staff and guests are their own and do not represent the opinion of the RDBN or any of its directors. Presenters are not subject matter experts, and information presented should be verified by certified professionals prior to informing business or legal decisions.
Over the past 5 episodes of Growing Opportunities, we have learned about how to set up the farm, get vegetables in the ground and growing, how to be successful in growing a field crop, the ins and outs of raising and processing livestock, and the basics about beekeeping. Now that we have all that framework of starting or expanding your farm to start producing products for sale, it is time to talk about how to sell your products. In this episode, we'll take some snippets of advice we've heard from some of our previous guests over this podcast series. Plus, we'll bring in some other producers from across the region to provide their pearls of wisdom for success. The first step, doing the research. Many folks getting into farming develop a business plan, and part of developing a business plan is doing some market research. Market research is part of an overall marketing plan, which is really understanding what you can grow in your area, which products will be the most successful for you to produce and sell, and then understanding the ways you can sell your products in your area, and then also the region. With me to talk about market research are both Megan Darcy, my agriculture coordinator partner, but also small-scale farmer out of the Smithers area, and then Chris Nutbrown. She is a beekeeper and manager of the farmers market up in Fort St. James. Welcome, Megan.
Hi, Michelle.
So, why do you feel it was important for you to do market research at the onset of your farm?
I did market research as part of a business plan that I did in 2009. I went through community features, so I actually had to do the business plan, but I had quite a bit of time and guidance for it. So the market research was a piece of that.
Okay. And so what were the first steps in doing your market research?
I guess the first step was trying to figure out what exactly they meant by, like, was at being asked for when they were talking about market research. And then I really focused on the concept of primary and secondary sources. So with primary being, you know, surveys and talking to people directly who might be potential customers, and maybe talking to people who were selling similar products. And then secondary research being more like workshops and doing reading up on books and kind of guides or course outlines and things like that to give me a sense of what other people were doing. So I did both of those things.
And so did you just look at it sort of from, like, you're out of the Smithers region, so did you look very regionally for that kind of information, or did you go a little broader?
Well, I was already pretty involved with the farmers market at that point. So I knew that my focal point was going to be the farmers market. So, and then also farm gate sales. So I really focused more just on between Smithers and Telqua.
So do you think that the market research that you did, helped you in your farm operation for the long term?
I think it did. I mean, I kind of sold what I had already intended on selling. It didn't change my ideas about what I was going to sell. It might have changed a little bit about how I deliver the product, and it made me think a lot about pricing and you know, who I was trying to sell the product to. And then later on down the road, when I had been in the business for a while, I used the same principles to evaluate new ideas that I had. So at one point, I was interested in selling chickens that were grown just on non-genetically modified feed. And so I actually surveyed people as they came up to me at the farmer's market and asked them directly if they thought it was worth paying extra money because the feed's more expensive. So, you know, that was kind of a good example, I guess, of sort of primary market research that helped me figure out whether or not I wanted to go ahead with growing one or more batches just straight up on the natural harvest feed, which is a GMO-free feed that has... It's not organic, but it has GMO-free proteins in it.
So then really the market research isn't necessarily, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be this, you know, a report or all this extensive work. It really can just be talking to people and asking your existing customers or new customers what their thoughts are.
Yeah, totally. I think it also helps to look at kind of the bigger picture in terms of, well, I mean, it's kind of part of their whole business planning process to sort of see how much you have to sell to make money at something. And so then in order to answer that question, as part of the market research, you do have to kind of look at the bigger question of like, how big a population base are you serving? How many people, you know, what percentage of those people are likely to purchase local food? And potentially pay a higher price for it. And then how many people are already taking up that market share? So is there still room for you? Or, and if the answer is no, if there's a lot of people already selling exactly what you're planning on selling, then I think that's where you start looking around for ways to make your product unique in the marketplace so that you can have a slightly different story and maybe appeal to slightly different demographic or group of people. But I also think too, like, you got to be careful with that, because if it's too specialized, then you might not get the volume that you need to make any money at it.
Good. Well, that's great advice. And there's always a lot to think about it. And like you said earlier, you know, you did that initial market research in 2009, which is a long time ago. But then you evaluate as you go.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of my thoughts at the time and what I'd heard from other people is that, you know, food is a little bit of a recession-proof product in that everybody needs to eat and you sort of always need to eat. But I think, and even over the time since I've been doing this, you know, local food at the beginning, people were kind of wondering whether or not it was going to be a little bit of a trend that died out, but it's actually kind of gone the other way. So, you know, but then as a result of the renewed interest, or I guess continued interest in local food, other people want to grow it too. So even though in theory the market should be quite stable and there should be lots of room in the market, there really isn't, because people get interested in farming and they get interested in growing their own food and they tend to grow more than what they need. And so then now you have increased competition as well. So competition, I believe, is a good thing. I'm fully in support of it, but it does mean you have to sort of stay on your toes a bit in terms of figuring out. And it also means that you have to do a good job with your existing clientele, but that's different than market research.
Great. Well, thanks, Megan. I really appreciate your insight and your experience. And that, I hope, will give folks a bit of basis for thinking about sort of that first step into selling.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having me on the podcast.
So when you know what you want and can sell it, it's important to develop your brand. This step can be as simple as designing a logo for your farm or your specific products to use for your labeling and your advertising. I'm here with Chris Nutbrown, a beekeeper and maker of bee products from Fort St. James. And she's going to talk to us a bit about her brand and how she goes about selling it. So welcome, Chris.
Thank you.
So can you just first give us a little, like, your name and what you do as a producer?
Yeah, so my name is Chris. I am a beekeeper. I've been a beekeeper for about 5 years now, and I sell lots of hive products, from like beeswax salves and lotions, cosmetics, reusable beeswax, food wraps, to the honey. And then I also use bees and beeswax in my resin jewelry that I sell at the market.
All right. And it's beautiful. I've seen it.
Thank you.
So when you decide to be a beekeeper, and then I'm assuming you realize all the wonderful things that can come out of bees, how did you decide how to start or when to start selling yourself?
You know, I actually started selling the resin jewelry before I became a beekeeper.
Okay.
It's because I love creating things. So I started creating too much stuff, and I thought, oh, this isn't sustainable. So the best solution I had was to sell it at the market. And then I thought, well, I'm getting into bees. Like, this is awesome. I can transition and start selling the products, like the beehive products, at the market. So it was sort of an easy transition for me to go from crafts to hive products and that sort of thing.
What's the approach you took to like create your brand to like make you stand out, I guess?
I like pretty things and nice things and nicely presented things. And it was a joy for me to sort of create products that looked nice and felt nice. And when you buy them, you feel like, oh, you know, like this is something nice for me. Like it just makes, you know, it would make me feel good. So I wanted to create things like that. And part of it for me, I was got out tons of books from the library, and I was just reading and looking and observing and seeing what was there, and even just going to other markets and seeing, you know, what the market was for those products, because that's an important thing. Like, you can Yes. make beautiful things and people won't buy them because it's just not the right market for them. So it was sort of a bit of research that way, but just trying to stay true to what I myself would like and what I would appreciate. So there was a lot of that.
Okay.
A lot of feedback too, because being at a market, you're interacting with your customers on, like, it's different than selling in a store. You're actually there and it's a personal connection. So I get personal feedback, and I have people, tell me, oh, I love your lip balm. It's the best lip balm I've ever had. Or I love your Backwoods bar. And it's like, oh, you're getting instant feedback on these things. And, or you get requests like, oh, would you ever do like a body butter or something like that? And some of my cosmetics that are great sellers, I would have never thought to do, because I'm not actually a makeup person.
Right.
But a friend was like, hey, have you ever thought of doing tinted lip balms? And I was like, no, I haven't. But now I make tinted lip balms and they're a big seller, or the glow creams and that sort of thing. So it's, it evolved very naturally that way.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And so, so you mostly sell at the farmer's market in Fort St. James. So can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. I think so. It's been just over 5 years, maybe 6 years, that I started selling at the farmer's market. And for me, I was always visiting the farmer's market before I was selling there. That was like my prime social time, my network. I got to see my people and hang out and have lunch, and it was just like an important community event. So I was already really attached to the market, and I thought, hey, well, like, maybe I could join this and start selling things once I started producing my own stuff. I started out again by selling resin jewelry and crafts, but worked into, and once my beekeeping took off, then I transitioned into selling my beehive products. And it's just like, it is a community event and atmosphere, and you meet so many people and locals and tourists. And I consider myself a shy person, so it was a little outside of my comfort zone, but it's amazing how much I actually love it and I look forward to it. And those little interactions are so wonderful. I enjoy that. Yeah. And the nice thing too is, like, you may think, Oh, this person's selling the same sort of stuff as I am, and like, oh, it's going to be competition. But in the end, it never really ends up being too competitive that way. It seems like we enhance each other's products, or we fit in the niche that the other isn't filling, and like, it complements, and it the more vendors you have, the more people you draw out, and it, yes, it's yeah, it all works out. Yeah. It seems to.
After all the market research is done and there's a plan in place, it's time to start advertising. And advertising can be anything from word of mouth, which still works really well in small communities like ours, to print advertising, but also now having an online presence. And advertising isn't just telling people, I sell a XYZ. It's also about sharing the story. And we're going to hear from some producers who have used everything from print material, banners, Facebook, YouTube, and putting the person behind the product, putting the producer behind the product. Now we're going to listen to a few snippets of advice from some producers. In this case, Yara Pavan, who we heard from way back in the first podcast series, and she's a beekeeper. And then we're also going to touch in again with Chris Nutbrown and her advice about what she does to advertise.
You know, we hear everywhere that the bee population is declining. So I think it's important for us to learn about this, be informed, and see what we can do to help, whether it is to plant, some flowers for them. My sister and I actually started kind of like a project, I guess you can say. It's called Be a Host. And it's basically, we bring these seed packets, they're phacelia seeds. So these phacelias, they are a perennial plant, and they grow like crazy, and the bees absolutely love it. They bring out this beautiful purple flower with beautiful purple pollen, and we have tons of them growing in our garden every year. And what happens is, at the end of the year, we harvest the seeds. Then we put 7 to 10 seeds in these little information packets, you know, how to plant them, grow them, and we give them out for free. In return, all we're asking is for a picture when a pollinator is visiting your flower, and to tag us on our Facebook at Be a Host. So my passion of beekeeping is based on being able to share my knowledge with others. That's pretty much what drives me, what motivates me to do what I do.
And you have a YouTube channel too, right?
Yes, yes. It's called Bees Are Funny. Right now we are waiting for the bees to wake up. That way we can dive our hands in our hive, see how they're doing. We have had success with our Bees Are Funny channel, Bee Yard. So we'll see how they're doing this year. But yes, the channel is there. It's called Bees Are Funny. Basically, we share all of our beekeeping adventures. That's the main niche. But we want to incorporate some farm stuff as well right now.
For me, the best way I found is through Facebook. I have my own Facebook site. And then I have, on the buy and sell, I'll just set a little reminder, like, oh, I'm at the market this Friday, come see me. I've got Backwoods bars, freshly made, I'll just highlight one product that I'm selling that week. And I will get people coming and say, oh, I saw this online, on Facebook. And it's amazing. It actually makes a huge difference. And I try to encourage the other vendors to do that as well, because when people see that, it's like a reminder. Oh, hey, yeah, that's at the market. And then they seek you out and they come and find you. It makes such a difference.
So far, we've had some really great advice from producers who sell items that are perfect for, say, a farmer's market. Now we're going to hear from a commodity producer, someone who sells livestock. And that's very common across our regional district. And so we're going to hear from her and her advice and experience in advertising and selling her animals. With me, I'm very happy to have Shirley Moon, and she is a very experienced cattle farmer and purebred Angus breeder from here in the Nechako Valley.
I'm Shirley Moon, and our farm name is Red Moon Angus here in Vanderhoof. Basically, we raise purebred Red Angus cattle, and we market the bulls that we raise to commercial producers here in the valley that have usually anywhere from 30 to 300 head of cattle. We market in the spring.
Okay.
Through our own bull sale, which the last 2 years we've done an online timed auction, which was totally new to us and a bit nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
We weren't really sure how that was going to go over with people. But I think through the whole COVID thing, people have gotten more familiar with buying online.
Yeah.
And the timed auction was a bit difficult for some to get their heads wrapped around, because yeah. The auction actually stays open until there's no bidding on any of the bulls before it closes. So
right.
you have to follow along. If one bull goes too high for you, then
yeah.
you have the option to switch to another bull.
Okay.
And it actually takes some of the pressure off. When you're buying a bull in a live auction, you have to make that decision right now.
Right there, absolutely.
You don't have a choice to go and pick something else. You might end up with something you don't want because you're farther down the list.
Oh, I see.
So once all the bids have settled, I think it was 3 minutes, 3 to 5 minutes,
yep.
and no one bids on any of the bulls, then the auction closes.
Okay.
So it's a whole new way of doing it.
Yeah.
We're still kind of feeling our way through that, and I guess we'll decide pretty quickly if we'll do the same next year or else go back to a live auction.
Right.
So far, it works well because farmers are busy that time of the year, especially
yeah.
cattle people. They're calving cows, and they don't have to take a whole day from the farm to go to the auction.
Yeah, exactly.
And sit there and wait for one or two bulls out of 100. I used to sell all the heifers or all the bull calves that I didn't think would make a breeding animal.
Yeah.
And they would just go to the local auction barn. I would get docked because the bulls were still intact. They
yeah.
hadn't been castrated.
Yeah.
So I'd get docked there. And I like my females. If they're not going to improve the Red Angus breed, if I think that they're just not going to do it,
yeah.
I like them to go to the feedlot. I don't want somebody buying them as breeding animals.
Right.
So we changed course a little bit on that. Instead of selling them off in the fall, the ones we don't want, we feed them through.
Okay.
And then I start booking dates at the local abattoir, and
yeah.
I start advertising on Facebook.
Yeah.
About either just hamburger or sides.
Yeah.
My customers have, in the last 3 or 4 years, I've got a steady group of customers now that seem to love the meat.
Yeah.
And so I usually contact them first.
Right.
Before
just
I start.
Contact them directly.
Yeah, before I start advertising it for sale to other people. The way it works is I sell it by the hanging weight. So after the animal's been slaughtered,
mm-hmm.
they weigh it. The customer pays me on that hanging weight.
Yeah.
And I pay for the cut and wrap as long as it's the basic cuts,
yeah.
not sausage and pepperoni, because that adds cost to it.
Yeah.
I pay the abattoir, and then the customer pays me.
Right.
And they pick it up directly at the abattoir.
Nice. And Facebook's worked for you?
Facebook's worked excellent for me. The webpage is more geared towards, I haven't done anything with selling
mm-hmm.
meat on the webpage, but it's geared more to the rancher looking for bulls.
Yeah, so you have the website that you list the weights and the progress on the breeding bulls, and then you use Facebook to market the meat that you sell.
I also use Facebook. We get the bulls pictured usually in February, the ones that we're selling through the auction for breeding bulls, and
mm-hmm.
We always get them pictured, and I'll start advertising them on Facebook too.
Okay.
And then those pictures get put into a catalog of the bulls that we have for sale.
Yeah.
So I have a mailing list. I can tell you exactly where every bull that we've ever sold has ended up, farm has bought it.
Yeah.
So I always know when someone comes back to me and says, I'd like to buy another bull this year, but I don't want anything that's related to something I had before. I can always look in my records and say, no, you can't have that one because you had a son, another son from that cow.
Right. Oh, that's great.
So, and then we also, so that catalog we put together goes online. People can look at it online, and I post that on Facebook when the catalog's up.
Yeah.
And I also keep that mailing list of where all the bulls have gone in the past. And throughout the year, I'm always talking to people.
Yeah.
And if they seem like they would like be interested in one of our animals, I make sure I get their phone number or address or something.
Right.
So I can send them a catalog.
Cool.
And we advertise in Beef in BC. Okay. That's pretty much the only one that I do anymore. It's direct advertising to people who would be in the market for those breeding bulls.
Right.
There's not a whole lot of point in me putting it in places where people aren't going to be interested in buying bulls.
Exactly. Exactly.
So we don't do that. Other things we have done in the past is I've gone to the some local trade shows.
Okay.
Like the last couple of years, the Cattlemen's AGM here in Vanderhoof hasn't been happening because of COVID, but I'm sure it'll be back at it next spring.
Yeah.
I usually set up a little booth, have pictures of the bulls, and just talk to people as they come through.
Okay. So it's not just selling some meat, it's that relationship that you build with the customer.
Hey. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. And one other thing, like I know when I've filled up at the gas station, I've seen a banner or a billboard when it's coming up to close to your bull sale.
Every spring we put up our banners, of course, change the dates on them. And I just try to put them in locations where people will see them driving by. I think there are 4x8 roll-up banners that I put up.
Yeah.
Brightly colored. Not a lot of writing on them because people are driving.
Yeah, exactly.
So the big thing it says is Bull Sale and Red Angus. And it has our website on it. I think it might have our phone number.
It might. I
can't remember. But I know it has the website on it so that they can look it up.
Yeah.
And it also says BC Livestock because BC Livestock helps us with putting the sale on their online platform.
Right. Cool. That's great, Shirley. You've obviously been doing this for a while. How many years have you been doing this?
I think it's pushing 30.
Oh, wow.
Selling the bulls.
Wow. Yeah. That's a long time.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Cool. Well, your bulls are beautiful.
Thank you.
You put a lot of care into it, obviously.
I think the most important thing is to always be honest with your customer. Like, not every bull is going to fit this guy's breeding program.
Okay.
So if he's looking for a certain thing, I'm going to tell him this is not the bull for you.
Right.
But this one will be.
You know,
if people ask me about how we raise our animals, the people who are buying meat.
Yeah.
Do we vaccinate? Yes.
Right.
I'm always honest with them because I want them to end up with a product, whether it's one of our bulls breeding their animals or somebody buying the meat that they're happy with.
Yeah.
They're feeding their family. It should be good.
Besides online and in-print advertising, you can also do some promotions in person, too. Some producers offer courses or workshops to share their skills and passion for what they produce or how they're farming. And then the courses offer an opportunity to, again, connect with consumers and keep them coming back.
Actually, this happened during the first year of lockdown with COVID. We didn't open the farmers market at all that year. So that was kind of a big blow to our local vendors because that's a big form of income for a lot of people. And for myself, I know it's like half my income comes from farmers markets. So I had to sort of start to diversify and come up with other ideas and things to do. And eventually we were allowed to do workshops. So I did like a natural deodorant making workshop. And it's just a fun way to get together with a small group and play and enjoy and do some learning and share some of those crafts. It's really fun.
There are also online sales. Some farms, like my own, I have an option to buy and order food from my website. So you can go to my website and you can download the order form and you can send that to me and I can put that together. I've also had an actual online store, and you actually put an inventory right within the website, and that tracks your inventory and It helps you with your tracking your sales and deliveries and whatnot, and it can be really effective. And so those are some options that you can also do to connect with customers directly and get them shopping without even being near you or seeing you, say, at a market. And apart from the direct sales options, you can also sell indirectly. Some producers bring their products to grocery stores, local food stores, and restaurants. And we've heard a little bit earlier in this podcast series from Joe Hug from Healthy Hug Organics, and he offered some really great advice.
An important thing for a farmer is not to have just one venue, not just one avenue of sales. You need a few. Like Healthy Hugs Organics, through the years, we have the farmer's market, we have some restaurants, we have Buckley Valley Wholesale, which is over Wadey, we have the Out of Hand store in Smithers, and we do a lot of private sales and whatnot. And then the box program, it's kind of a CSA, community supported agriculture. We don't follow those rules totally, because in a real CSA, if the farmer has a loss, then everybody in the CSA takes a little bit of the loss. But if we have a loss, we just absorb the loss, but we really haven't had any real money, what I could call really big crop failures. So, and that's mainly because of the soil science, I would say. I was just quite confident in being able to tell people that, you prepay these boxes, and if we don't deliver you a box, we bring your money back. I'm not sure if that was such a wise business decision, but it sounded very authentic. And so far it's worked for us.
I need to do a plug for one of the easiest ways to advertise your farm and products in the regional district of Buckland and Chaco. The agricultural team at the RDBN works within the Economic Development Department. Specific to our region, producers can list their farm and products for free. And with me is Sherry to help explain more about the Connecting and Consumers Online Directory. Welcome, Sherry.
Hi, Michelle.
First of all, can you just tell us your name and your role at the regional district?
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Sherry Jansen. I work in the Economic Development Department at the regional district as an economic development assistant. I do a variety of different things in my role, such as grant writing for not-for-profit groups and the RDBN, tourism initiatives, communications, and one of my favorite initiatives being connecting consumers and producers. I promote connecting consumers and producers on our social media channels, and I plan market takeover events and other visits to the local markets in the region. And I run the Connecting Consumers and Producers event funding program.
Okay, so you've done a little bit about it, but can you explain how the Connecting Consumers and Producers directory came about and why it's an important initiative?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Connecting Consumers and Producers Guide to Eating Local began in 2014. The RDBN identified a growing movement in the region towards the consumption of locally grown food. So the guide was created promoting local food producers and providing resources to consumers about eating locally produced food all year round. And it's important for the RDBN to support this initiative because a critical component to food security is our local producers. So we have a role to play in supporting local agriculture and local supply chains. And when we buy more, we can help support local producers to produce more. So, and we all know that local food just tastes better. So,
yes, it does. So the Connecting Consumers and Producers was traditionally a paper copy to start. And now it's available online. So what are the benefits of the online version that you understand, and but also that you've heard from producers?
Yeah, sure. The Connecting Consumers and Producers brochure was a booklet that was updated and printed just annually. The brochure was handed out at events attended by the RDBN or at events supported through the Connecting Consumers and Producers event funding. And with the provincial health orders and restrictions that began in 2020, we had to do things a little bit differently because we couldn't attend those events. So we still wanted our consumers to have connections with those local producers, and we still wanted to educate people about how and why to eat local foods. So we brought the entire guide, including the directory, online. With everything online and not being limited to just handing out brochures, we have been able to reach a broader audience. So a huge benefit right there. And something that we have seen that is a huge benefit for producers is the ability to make changes and updates instantly, not having to wait until that next year when the guide is produced again. So a producer can email us and say, hey, can you add pork to my listing, or can you change my phone number in the directory? So not having to wait to make those changes.
So how does a producer get listed in the directory, and is there a cost?
It is super simple to get listed in the directory. We can quickly and very easily add a local producer. It's absolutely free. It's just a quick email to economic.development@rdbn.bc.ca asking to be added to the directory. We send a form that the producer will then fill out so we can create their producer listing. And we can do it so quickly that a listing can be up on the website within a day or two. So yeah, and if you miss that email address, you can find it at the bottom of every page on the Connecting Consumers and Producers website.
Well, thank you, Sherry. That's wonderful. And you had listed a few other initiatives at the beginning there. Do you want to just quickly mention that grant?
Sure. Right now we're promoting the Connecting Consumers and Producers Event Funding Program. So that's open to not-for-profits, groups, municipalities across the region if they're wanting to do an event such as a barbecue at a farmer's market. They can apply for funding up to $1,100 from the RD. And we set them up with everything they need to help promote the Connecting Consumers and Producers directory.
It is really important to understand that no matter which route you take to sell your products, there are rules, regulations, and recommendations on how to do that safely, depending on if you're selling meat or vegetables and preserves and whatnot. There is also the consideration of, say, liability insurance. It's always important to make sure you check in with your local health authority to make sure that you're following all the health and safety rules. And also, you can go to the rdbn.bc.ca website to help you find out where to look for those rules and regulations to keep you and your customers safe. This was a crash course in marketing for your farm, and I hope you were able to gain a bit more insight into the different tools that can help you be successful as a producer in the RDBN. Overall, do what feels right and manageable for your farm. Having a range of advertising or sales options will help you broaden your customer base and have your customers coming back.
I'd like to thank all the guests who talked to me today about marketing on the farm. Thanks to Megan Darcy, Chris Nutbrown, Yara Pavan, Shirley Moon, Joe Hug, and Sherry Jansen. Artwork is by me, Michelle Roberge. Music for Growing Opportunities is found on the Free Music Archive.
Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Growing Opportunities podcast series. This and other Growing Opportunities podcasts can be accessed through all major podcast apps and on the RDBN and CICK websites. The link to the RDBN website is rdbn.bc.ca. Keep growing.